time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, May 6th, the day after Cinco de Mayo. So here's a little pop quiz for you guys. You ready for this? How do you come up with what does Cinco de Mayo mean? Cinco, 5, de Mayo, May. So it's the 5th of May. A lot of you know that. But anyway, also yesterday was May 5th, was the beginning of Ramadan. So to all of our folks that are of that particular religion, we just wish you well and all that. Unfortunately, 600 rockets were launched into Israel. So why is it Ramadan has to kick off all this kind of violence? But yeah, 600 rockets didn't make a lot of news, but that is also having a quiet impact on the markets. And can't wait to hear from Joe Farr later on. But it's good to have you here with us. Sorry for that downer note, but I wanted to get that out there because it just blows me aware that this is not being reported on nearly as much as it needs to be. Anyway, we're here. Some of the markets are tanking today, so we'll get that update from our good buddy Joe here in just a minute. But again, we say this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. We've won awards, and it's always good. We appreciate them. But really where it comes is your listenership and you passing it on. And there's so many of you that tell me you're listening. It just blows me away. So we're grateful that we're a part of where you get your information on what is happening in this ever-dynamic, ever-changing mortgage industry. Our commitment, again, is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. Again, May 6th. So if you're listening on a downloaded basis, you know what it's about. Anyway, we're proud to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. Again, you can go industrysyndicate.com. Check it out. See all the other podcasts. We're pleased to have this affiliation. Proud to be a part of them. They call me the pioneer, you know, which means you're an old man. Like, and you pioneered this whole mortgage podcast thing. So as did Alice, Andy, Joe, and we're so grateful to be here with you, bringing you hot information. You know, Alice in her segment, I think it was a number of weeks ago, maybe a month or more ago, talked about VantageScore. And we went out and connected with, I met Barrett at the recent TMC, the Mortgage Collaborative Winter Conference here in Austin. Sat down with Barrett and said, Barrett, we've got to get this on the podcast. So we sat down late last week, recorded an interview with Barrett Burns, who's president and CEO of VantageScore. Really some interesting information. One little tidbit is, and I had to go back and have him repeat it. So see if I got this right, you guys fact checkers out there, but they're using the VantageScore, 10 million more millennials will be qualified to buy a mortgage loan. So we got to get behind this within the industry. We're hearing hear more about it. Not getting a lot of traction yet, except a little bit of listening ears from our friend at Freddie Mac. And also we'll see with Mark Calabria now in at FHFA if we make any more progress. Before we get started, let's say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America and Black Knight. And today's competitive market, critical for lenders, is the delivery of decision quality business intelligence. And it's getting it to the right employees at the right time to answer the demand. We have Black Knight. They have developed this actionable intelligence platform that delivers data that drives growth and reduces cost. Learn more about this intelligence, this powerful solution that can provide you an advantage, go to blackknightinc.com. Also, Open Mortgage, leading buyer of reverse mortgage loans and home of some of the top LOs in the country, as well as Finastra. Now, Finastra has their Fusion Mortgage Bot solution, automatically addresses compliance issues and a whole lot of other very neat enhancements that bring about borrower satisfaction and also greater market share. Great group of people. I tell you, I love their mobile app. That's one of the things that I'm looking at and seeing some great advantages. We did two webinars for them and got some great feedback on their mobile app. Check them out, Finastra. Then we can talk about Lenders One, the Mortgage Cooperative. These are both mortgage co-ops creating competitive advantages for both lenders and vendor members. Velma, an efficient mortgage marketing email platform. We use it to get the word out. If you're not signed up, be sure to contact us as well as Knowledge Coup, providing easy and fun training for mortgage experts, and Vidyard. It's a video platform that we're using for our business, and we're recommending it for a lot of mortgage companies out there, and more people are listening to it. We're hearing from them, say, hey, listen, I heard you talk about Vidyard on the podcast, Lincoln, and we decided to give it a try, and it's really got some cool features. So if you're an underwriter sending out an email, you can just send out an email or add a little extra touch, a personal touch, record a video, go through the conditions, and send it out. Check it out, vidyard.com. And finally, a special thank you to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Joe for their contributions to this podcast each and every week. Without further ado, let's get out to Rob Van Rapphorst with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, CFPB issued a notice of proposed rulemaking and an advance notice of proposed rulemaking related to HMDA. The NPRM proposes two alternatives that would permanently increase the coverage threshold from 25 to either 50 or 100 for closed-end mortgage loans, and also extend for 2 years the 500 loan threshold for open-ended lines of credit with a permanent threshold of 200 loans. The ANPR seeks information on the costs and benefits of collecting and reporting the data points in the 2015 HMDA rule added to Regulation C and certain pre-existing data points that the 2015 HMDA rule revised. Comments on the NPRM are due 30 days after publications. Comments on ANPR are due 60 days after publication. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining us.
Good job, Rob. Also want to call attention again to the secondary conference. I'll be there. It's in New York, coming up here in a few weeks. Looking forward to it. I have many meetings scheduled. Looking forward to seeing you. We're going to pre-record our podcast that day and have it ready to play out. The digital business card, folks, it's working. Just got three more emails on Sunday saying, hey, Dave, your card was shared. Do you know when you share your business card, what happens to it? Folks, this is innovative, and you need to check it out. I talk about it regularly, but I'm telling you, it works. Three more people. And again, I made a phone call to one, and they're saying, yeah, how did you know? We're thinking about checking you out and using you, having you do some consulting to us. So really encouraging. Check out the digital business card on our website at the top right-hand corner. Look forward to hearing from you on that. Les Parker brings us the TM Spotlight this week with a macro view of the markets and also a hilarious soundbite. So let's hear what Les has for us this week. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by LoanLogic. Bonds know nothing stays the same. But if Powell's willing to play the game, it's coming around again. Last Wednesday, easing is coming, rang through the fiber optics from doves buying bonds because the Fed lowers a technical rate 5 basis points. But then the mild-mannered Jay Powell stepped to the mic and declared, no case for easing or tightening. So the struggle continues among the G4 central banks. What do they focus on? U.S. mild growth and mild inflation, or Europe's low growth and dead inflation? The Fed is neutral while the rest of the G4 are doves. Bonds believe in Powell, while stocks believe in doves. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Oh, that's good job. Coming around again. I love that. Good job, Les Parker and Gary Cantrombone. I appreciate it. You know, we were talking to Les the other day, and he says, yeah, Dave, thanks for coaching us. We've taken the bar up a bit. So good job on those. Joe Farr, I mean, it's just you and I talking, but, you know, it's very effective. We get the information, what's going on in the market, and we're glad to have you here this week with what's on the economic calendar. But let's start off with what's happening this morning.
Well, it's been a crazy morning, and I guess what we're learning is one tweet has a whole lot more effect than 700 rockets, because there's very little discussion about the Israeli-Hamas situation, but there's a lot of discussion about Trump's tweet. And
Boy, that's the truth.
If you hadn't heard, he
the missile of words.
He threatened to increase the tariffs if China doesn't agree to a trade deal on Friday. And that really spooked the market. Stocks fell, as you might expect. At one point, they were down 400 points. And MBS prices rose, or mortgage rates fell in reaction to that as well. some of that's been it created a little volatility today, at least in the bond market, where at one point the 20 basis points or so rise that we saw immediately this morning had fallen back to almost no gain for the day, but now we're back up to close to 20 basis points to the good on MBS prices. So a lot of volatility, and you know, it's going to create situations all week long as to whether or not, you know, the trade deal becomes a trade war. We'll have to wait and see. Dave, looking at last week, we saw a lot of price volatility on MBS prices and therefore mortgage rates, but not a lot of movement. In fact, it was just a small net drop in prices. The early economic data that came out during the week was mixed. On Tuesday, consumer confidence and home sales were strong, but then on Wednesday, construction spending and ISM manufacturing were weak. The Fed caused a lot of volatility on Wednesday, as Les referenced in his deal. Really what happened was that the investors read into the statement that was released at 2 Eastern time that there might be hope for a rate cut this year. But then once the press conference began and Fed Chairman Powell began speaking, he made it pretty clear that no change in Fed funds rate was more likely than a cut in rates. And so, you know, the benefit that people read into the statement was kind of counteracted by what Fed Chair Powell said, and at the end of the day, it was a net wash. Then the jobs data came out on Friday, and we all saw that there was a huge number of net new jobs added, 263,000 net new jobs, and that exceeded the expectations. 190,000 were expected. The unemployment rate fell, but it was not for good reason, because people who had been looking for work left the job hunt. The average hourly earnings rose 0.2, which was a little below the 0.3 that was expected, and the market reacted to the job report unlike you might have thought based on what I just gave you. You would think that many more jobs than expected would send a signal that, you know, strength in the economy and potential increase in inflation and would have a negative effect on MBS prices, and it didn't. The market reacted more strongly to the reduced or the lower amount of wage inflation than what was expected. It is the big concern right now, not the number of jobs so much as not if, but when wages will begin to rise. And so the fact that they didn't rise as much in the month as what was expected was a good thing for the market. And then later in the morning, the ISM services index came out weaker than expected, and that too kind of helped MBS prices on Friday. Now, looking at the calendar for this week,
this week.
JOLTS tomorrow.
JOLTS.
PPI inflation on Thursday, CPI inflation on Friday. As we talked about earlier, the trade negotiations with China are going to, you know, command all the attention during the week. Negotiations were to resume on Wednesday. There was some talk this morning that that might not happen, but then I've heard recently that it is still on. And an announcement was hoped for Friday, but that seems less likely now. But with the Trump threat of increasing tariffs on Friday, if the deal's not done, it's going to be a very tenuous week. And as we listen to the headlines, it's going to affect the markets, whether it's good or bad, I don't know.
That's it. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. JOLTS, that'll be an interesting one. Inflation, of course, we always pay attention to that. But, I mean, it could be another week, but it'll be the tweets that'll be doing dictating more of the volatility than anything. So appreciate it, Joe. Appreciate you being here always. The weather's so nice at this time of the year here in Central Texas.
It is.
Good to have you and Andy and I in this area. So we've got to get Alice to move south. That's what we need to do. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Head over to Scott Gordon and hear what he has to say on the Science of Sales segment. Scott?
How many times have you been asked, what do you do? Too many to count. Most people answer with their job title. I'm a loan originator. Boring. Introducing yourself is an opportunity to communicate with story. Here are 3 steps to creating your story. 1. Invent a main character for the listener to play a part in the story. 2. Create an easy-to-follow series of events that pose a problem for the main character. And 3. Finish your story with a 1-step description of what you do to solve the problem. When someone asks, what do? You could reply, Imagine that you're a traveler in a foreign land, and what lies between you and your destination is a wilderness of quicksand, thorns, and overgrown trails. People can't brave the wilderness alone. To make it to the other side, you need a guide, and I am that guide. My team has the best track record of getting travelers through the wilderness without getting stuck in quicksand or lost. 3 steps to a simple story to answer one of the most common questions asked. This sounds too good to be true. It's not. It's just the science of sales.
Science of sales. Positive. We get a lot of feedback on that segment. Love it. Check out Open Mortgage's website, openmortgage.com. Appreciate them and our relationship with them and what they're doing in the marketplace. A lot more lenders are now inquiring. As a result of Scott being here about advertising on their radio program, we've got 2 new ones possibly coming on, and I have a warehouse lender that just signed up. We'll be announcing that one here shortly as well. So anyway, if you want to advertise, get a hold of us, go to our website. You'll see where you can click there. Alice Alvey, good to have you here with us. I was teasing you about temperatures, but, you know, it's starting to warm up there, so we can't give you too bad a time. I know you call us and harass Joe, Andy, and I when we're down here sweltering in the summer, how nice and cool it is up there. But anyway, good to hear your voice. What do you have for the weekly legislative update?
Well, I have a few things. So you heard Rob and the MBA Mortgage Minute early in the program talk about HMDA. That really isn't a huge deal for anybody to be worried about for those of you on the compliance side. Certainly, there's an impact to the smaller community lenders and credit unions who kind of sit on that bubble sometimes, and it's difficult to report, not report, depending on how many loans you close each year. And then the other notice that they're seeking some comment on is really about the type of reporting, commercial to residential reporting, that doesn't really hit a lot of companies. So that definitely hits the banks, but not for the wider mortgage lender population. So don't get excited that they're going to reduce our HMDA reporting, because that's not what it's meant to be. A couple other things is, yeah, right. Darn it. Okay. There are in the CFPB, you'll get a chance to see on the compliance side, again, HMDA examination procedures, ECOA baseline review procedures, fair lending procedures. They've published a lot of updates to these. So, again, for those of you who are on that compliance side, or you listen to this to pass it on to your compliance people, let them know they need to make sure that they go check all of that out. And one thing we did stumble on with the new 1003, just, again, another heads up, this is way off, but some companies might start using it early, certainly if you're not on one of the major LOS providers, who so far is not going to be ready anytime in 2019. But if you're on, for example, a software provider who may be ready earlier, USDA is not going to accept the new 1003 before its actual date of February 1st. So even though Fannie and Freddie have said they will, you may have some problem with the other agencies. So just a heads up, all that tells me is it doesn't pay to be early on this 1003 piece right now. And then one of the other pieces is that on Friday, Ginnie Mae issued a request for input from pooling eligibility. So one of the things to know about this particular request for input is it's super short. You have just a couple weeks to respond. And they've made it very clear they're not going to publish responses. This is not following the normal type of RFI where you may be able to see what everyone else thinks. And then you can just go, yeah, copy that. This is just going to be very short. You have to come up with your own thoughts on this and send it in to Ginnie Mae through the normal channels. And it is pretty easy to find from their website. But the bottom line is they're not happy with how fast the higher LTV VA cash out refis are paying off. And they feel it's impacting the Ginnie 2 pools in particular, because those are mixed in, and they feel like, well, FHA, MIP, and USDA fees are paying for the fast refis that are happening with these higher VA cash out refis. So should they be in their own pool? For those of you who understand just basic market, which is just me, I can just get the basics. If you take the ugly stuff out and put it in its own pool, it sounds like pricing will be ugly on that pool. So it's not quite sure how this will pan out. They're proposing some alternative paths for a single issuer, custom security. Are they going to create a new MIP specifically for shorter duration loan types? It's worth the read to just see what's going to probably be the inevitable, as the RFI time is pretty short and they're not sharing. So we'll stay tuned. I'm sure there's more to come on Ginnie Mae trying to get a handle on the fast payoffs on the VA cash outs above 90. So that's my report for today, Dave.
Good job, Alice. Appreciate it so much. You're so well known. But I always want to tell people, no, as our audience is expanding, that Alice is a CMB, Master CMB, Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. And we're glad to have you here with the legislative update. I got to put that to the front end. I had several questions. I go, are you new to the industry? You've been under a rock? You don't know who Alice Alves is? Anyway, I cracked up. So anyway, I'm learning to add that. Because we do have a lot of new millennials coming into this. And my daughter's fiance is rooming. One of his roommates at Baylor has a finance major, is listening to the podcast all the time. And it's kind of circulated around Baylor and some other universities. So that's encouraging. Hopefully your educational segment is going to continue to draw them into the mortgage industry. We need some new, fresh blood. And if you want to find a great place to go, this is my unabashed, unshameful ad for Union Home. They do a great job on their apprentice program, and go in and check it out. And if you can apply there, get into that, you're fortunate enough, you'll be really surprised what it is. And lenders, if you don't have one going, you should get a program, an intern program. I said apprentice, intern program is what I meant, to really help college students come in and get familiar with our industry. Great job, Alice. You work for a great company. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you. I think they're great too.
Yeah, they take good care of you, and that's all we care about. That's one of the things we care about, I should say. Anyway, Knowledge Coop, talk about taking good care of your training needs. They do a great job. They do it through humor, and I want you to check out what Nathan has for us from Knowledge Coop, and it's powered by their smart digital platform.
Hey, Nathan here from the Knowledge Coop. Are you a teacher or coach, either professionally or aspirationally? Then let me share these words from Ben Franklin as inspiration. Tell me and I forget. Teach me, and I may remember, but involve me, and I learn. Benjamin Franklin's famous quote has since been proven by science and educators, and they now call it experiential learning, and it's sage advice for anyone in the mortgage industry. So do you have some training to do? Then check out the Knowledge Cube for fun and easy video-based training for mortgage professionals out there, and it's all powered by a smart digital platform.
Check it out, knowledgecoop.com. Appreciate Nathan Nottingham and the whole team, Ken Perry and the group up there. And they're just in the right just north of Portland on the Washington side of the border, across the Columbia River. Great group of people, do some very innovative things. Always love to have Alan here, but we're missing him today. So let's run over to our good friend Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor.
Hi, Dave Licken.
Good to have you here, friend. How you doing?
Yeah. I'm good. I'm doing very well.
Did you do anything for Cinco de Mayo? You go out and always have so much fun, do so many things. Or were you studying for your master or for your PhD again?
Well, my dissertation is launching, so some of the pace is slowing down. It's just getting spread out. But yeah, we actually went over to, well, first off, Teresa's birthday is on May the 5th. So we went over to James and Ira's house, and my son and daughter-in-law, which is where my grandson lives. And I was holding Finn on my lap, and I was playing video games with James while Teresa and Ira were at the spa. And then we all kind of came back and went to Perry's in downtown Austin for dinner. So it was a great day for us, yes.
Oh, yeah. You're a grandpa now, getting your PhD. So a grandpa with a PhD, I don't know, we could have a lot of fun with that. But let's talk about how companies can be more profitable.
Well, I was going to talk about that, but I wanted to start with a couple of quick thoughts. So we've been looking at the economic forecast. We've been looking at the economic results. We're hearing that the economy is doing great. It's the best in 50 years. And so we look up out of our mortgage hole and we go, oh, man, great economy. And we look down into our mortgage arena, our silo of mortgage activity, and we go, is this the best mortgage economy in 50 years? And I probably got to say, yeah, probably not. So we need to think about that, though, for just a second, because one possible issue is that, and I'm going to talk a little bit of PhD Greek for a second, but the assigned value of inputs is not aligned with economic value. So what that means is the cost of the inputs to the mortgage process are not aligned with the market value or the risk, or saying that even simpler, are the costs incurred in the lending process worth the money? Are you paying the right amount of money for the things you have to buy in order to make a loan? And that starts with everything you pay for, salaries, number of people, commission, all this stuff is all costs that you incur. And so if you're not doing as well as you think you should do, then one of the places to start is an assessment of the economic value of the input cost. So something to think about. So as an example, so Walmart, you know, 20 years ago was spreading wildly across the U.S. Now it's spreading globally. But when Walmart would enter a small town, oftentimes it would lower the cost that a consumer would pay for a hammer. So people would go, this is great. I can buy a cheap hammer. I go in this great big store. But the consequence of that oftentimes was they drove the local hardware store out of business. So in this case, when Walmart comes into a small market, it means that only the most efficient and lowest cost providers survive. And that means that you either have to have lower cost inputs or bigger gain on sale. You have to have more revenue or lower cost. Those are the choices. Those are the only choices you will, aside from efficiency. So what is the ROI of a mortgage company? So Dave and I wrote an article that ran in the Mortgage Banker magazine for the MBA years ago now, called The Future of Mortgage Banking. It's still available. And in there we talk about ROI. What is the return on investment? And mortgage
love
banking
that article.
In the, yeah, it was very
was
well done.
Good,
good job, Dave.
Yeah, and it's still applicable.
It still is. And so what's your ROA? What's your return on investment? What's your profit on volume? And is it the same as it's been in the past? And I would venture to say it's not. We've seen companies that were doing 30, 40, 50 basis points pre-tax volume on pre-tax earnings on volume down to 10, 15 basis points or less pre-tax earnings on volume, which means that you have no room for error. You can't have any more cost to have or have any more reduction in revenue. So if you're not making the ROI you wanted, are the owners okay with that? And there's some mortgage companies that are okay with that. The owners are okay with earning less. But if the owners aren't okay, what are you going to do? How are you going to change the cost of inputs in order to increase the ROI? Because, again, only the most efficient, low-cost companies survive. And that's just a check. That's a health check. That's just it's a little bit philosophical, but it's really kind of grounded in economic theory, where what's the value what's the economic value of your inputs? Which means that when you buy something, you take that money you spent and you earn more money because of the cost you incurred. That's economic value. And so if you're not getting that, then you need to really rethink the business. And I know, Dave, you and I have kind of hit on this a number of times in what's the business really worth? What are the costs really? Are you really getting your bang for your money? So that's a whole other topic. So I'll go real fast through my main point. But it crossed my mind in listening to Joe that is it really a good economy? Well, are mortgage owners making more now than they did 3 years ago? The answer is probably not.
Not so much.
So one of the ways we deal with this, one of the ways that we think about this is we'd say, okay, how do we make more money? How do we plan, implement, measure, and adjust our business so that we make more money? And so I'm going to talk a little bit about planning, just probably another 2 minutes. So it's May. It's May the 6th today. We're coming up on our summer ramp up. So that's good. We make money typically in the second quarter, third quarter, and then start to not do so well in the fourth and the first. That's just kind of a mortgage banking cycle generally. So as we start to look at May, how much more volume are we going to have in the summertime? So how much is volume going to increase? And as volume increases, are our costs going to increase? Are we going to have more costs because we have more volume? And if so, are we going to is there going to be an impact on our gain on sale? Is there going to suddenly be more competition and we're going to have to lower our gain on sale to be competitive? Is our product mix going to move? So we were hoping to get a bunch of FHA. We ended up getting a bunch of conventional, and we didn't make what we thought we were going to make. And then the investor purchases slow down because everybody's busier, and that affects cash flow. And you've got your warehouse haircut, so you end up with a cash shortfall in the midst of a volume ramp-up. So, you know, how'd that happen? Well, it happens every time it happens, but you can predict it. You can have a plan, have an ABCD version of the plan. So when you do a plan, you want to have a reasonable expectation of what's going to happen next. You want to anticipate the unexpected and know what are you going to do about it. Now, one of the places where planning falls is that accountants like precision, and planning is always wrong. Whatever you think you're going to get, you might be close, and hopefully you are close, but it's unlikely that you're to the penny. And that's what accountants don't like. They like precision. So finance people like me, like Joe, we're okay with the fuzziness a little bit. That's where the CFO part comes in, because you got to be able to look around the corner. You got to be able to anticipate what's coming next, and you got to have an idea about what could happen and what are you going to do about it. And this planning process is how you respond to the dynamics of business. We don't just guess. We take the best information we can get, and we assemble it, and we evaluate it, and we come up with conclusions based on the information we have, based on the past, based on what we think is going to happen. And that's part of planning. And that's part of how we make more money. That's also how we address a short ROI if we have an ROI less than we expect to earn. So there you go.
Yeah, good job. Yeah. You know, that was, I was thinking back on that article that we wrote, and we need to get that republished. That was really a good article. That was excellent.
Well, and it shows people that if you take an additional $1 million and invest it into a mortgage company, and a mortgage company has a warehouse turn rate of 1.2, which is not that high, and they make 20 basis points on volume, which isn't that – well, at the time, it wasn't that high – but you end up with like a 40% return on investment. Where are you going to get a 40% return on investment? It's actually 43.2, but it's amazing. Yeah, Dave, we should. It's out there.
We should. That's good.
It's on our website, actually. I don't know if it's on your website.
Yeah, I'm going to put it on our website. Make sure it's there. Oh, it's a good article. Good job. Excellent. Love your updates, Andy. Very smart guy who has a lot of insights on how you could be more profitable. And if you're looking at making an investment in the industry or just want to figure out a way to be more make more money, then you can get a hold of Andy at andy@mbs-team.com. Appreciate you, Andy Schell, so much.
Thanks
for some barbecue, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Two seconds. So when Dave and I used to tag team, I'd go in and say, you got to cut all these costs and you got to make more money. You got to make all these changes. And then Dave would come along and go, yeah, we kind of need to do that, but it's going to be okay. And you guys are going to be all right. And this is actually going to work out awesome for you guys. So it was kind of a good cop, bad cop kind of thing. And it worked out.
It was. Well, it was good. It was good. I enjoyed doing that. We need to go back and do one more of those. There was something. Oh, a profitability on the profitability. You know, when I just did a two webinars. One for the ABA, American Bankers Association. Another one for the Independent Community Bankers Association, ICBA. And we did those over the last couple of weeks. And I went in and researched the cyclical nature of this, the profitability. It was really interesting because everyone looks at it, points to 2012, 102 or 108 basis points, and it's fallen to 14 basis points. What's really interesting, Andy, when you go look at over a longer period of time, this is just cyclical nature, just like 2 months on, 2 months off, 2 months on, 2 months off, very much of a roller coaster ride. And it's just been like that for I don't know how long, but I wanted to get your perspective. Do you have any sense for how long it has been? We've been riding, every 7 years or so, we find ourselves in a thin margin business. We pop up and then it deteriorates down. Do you have any idea how long it's been going?
Yeah, well, I've experienced it, and you've experienced it. And first off, I would say if someone says it used to be 104, they're not measuring it right. And so I don't think it's been that high when we look at all-in cost. And when you look at it from a bank's perspective, they have a lot of shared revenue and shared costs, and so it gets really fuzzy. But if you look purely at an IMB without the propping upness from a bank, you're going to see, the all-in pre-tax profits ranging from – probably 25 to 70, and it kind of stays in that band, and that's about where it is, and it comes down a little bit and goes back up a little bit. And, when refi hits and efficiencies pick up and new technology enhances things and new entrants come into the market because of a refi, and then they stay and they crowd everybody, make everybody crowded, so it's gas station wars, and then it thins back out again and margins go back up. Maybe it's every 3 or 4 years. Maybe it's 5. Maybe it is 7. Yeah. But it's certainly – I would say over the last 30 years, it's been pre-tax profits on volume of range. And Joe can throw in on this too. Pre-tax profits
on
volume,
Joe,
ranges from 25 to 30 to 70, depending on the business and
Joe,
the product.
Your
mix.
Thoughts? Yeah, we're getting some chatter on this. We need to do a podcast on this. Just dedicate this to a hot topic. Joe, what's your thoughts?
Well, going back a long ways, I think that there was a lot more money obviously there's a lot more money being made at times of high refinances, and we'll never see that again. I think the efficiencies created by technology is going to thin all that out, make it so competitive. Those days will never be seen again.
during the early 2000s, it was distorted because of subprime and 108 gain on sales with subprime. So you gotta normalize that effect. But otherwise, I think it comes and goes, but it's always profitable if you do it right.
Well, good business. We're in it. Been in here for 45 years myself, so it's been a long time. Andy, so good to have you here with us. Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor. And we're going to take right off into the Hot Topics segment with Barrett Burns, who's the president and CEO of VantageScore.